As the Parshendi neared the top of the formation, Dalinar attacked, using the advantage of surer footing and high ground. The Parshendi didn't bother dodging. He took a hit to the helm, which cracked, but gained a chance to swing at Dalinar's legs. Dalinar leaped backward, feeling painfully sluggish. He barely got out of the way and wasn't able to get in a second strike as the Parshendi climbed atop the formation. The Parshendi man made an aggressive thrust. Setting his jaw, Dalinar raised his forearm to block and stepped into the attack, praying to the heralds that his forearm plate would deflect the blow. The Parshendi blade connected, shattering the plate, sending a shock up Dalinar's arm. The gauntlet on his fist suddenly felt like a lead weight, but Dalinar kept moving, swinging his blade for his own attack. Not at the Parshendi's armor, but at the stone beneath him. Even as the molten shards of Dalinar's forearm plate sprayed in the air, he sheared through the rock shelf under his opponent's feet. The entire section broke free, sending the shardbearer tumbling backward toward the ground. He hit with a crash. Dalinar slammed his fist, the one with the broken arm guard, into the ground and released the gauntlet. It unlatched and he pulled his hand free into the air, sweat making it feel cold. He left the gauntlet, it wouldn't work properly now that the forearm piece was gone, and roared as he swung his blade single-handed. He sliced through another chunk of rock and sent it falling down toward the shardbearer. The Parshendi stumbled to his feet, but the rock smashed down on top of him, sending out a splash of stormlight and a deep cracking sound. Dalinar climbed down, trying to get to the Parshendi while he was still. Unfortunately, Dalinar's right leg was dragging, and when he reached the ground, he walked in a limp. If he took the boot off, he wouldn't be able to hold up the rest of the shard plate. He gritted his teeth, stopping as the Parshendi stood up. He'd been too slow. The Parshendi's armor, though cracked in several places, was nowhere near as strained as Dalinar's. Impressively, he'd managed to retain his shard blade. He leveled his armored head at Dalinar, eyes hidden behind the slit in the helm. Around them, the other Parshendi watched silently, forming a ring but not interfering. Dalinar raised his blade, holding it in one gauntleted hand and one bare. The breeze was cold on his clammy, exposed hand. There was no use running. He fought here. For the first time in many, many months, Kaladin felt fully awake and alive. The beauty of the spear whistling in the air, the unity of body and mind, hands and feet reacting instantly, faster than thoughts could be formed, the clarity and familiarity of the old spear forms learned during the most terrible time in his life. His weapon was an extension of himself. He moved it as easily and instinctively as he did his fingers. Spinning, he cut through the Parshendi, bringing retribution to those who had slaughtered so many of his friends. Repayment for each and every arrow loosed at his flesh. With Stormlight making an ecstatic pulse within him, he felt a rhythm to the battle, almost like the beat of the Parshendi song. And they did sing. They'd recovered from seeing him drink in the Stormlight and speak the words of the second ideal. They now attacked in waves, fervently trying to get to the bridge and knock it free. Some had leaped to the other side to attack from that direction, but Moash had led Bridgman to respond there. Amazingly, they held. Syl twirled around Kaladin in a blur, riding the waves of stormlight that rose from his skin, moving like a leaf on the winds of a storm. Enraptured. He'd never seen her like this before. He didn't break his attacks. In a way, there was only one attack, as each strike flowed directly into the next. His spear never stopped, and together with his men he pushed the Parshendi back, accepting each challenge as they stepped forward in pairs. Killing. Slaughtering. Blood flew in the air and the dying groaned at his feet. He tried not to pay too much attention to that. They were the enemy, yet the sheer glory of what he did seemed at odds with the desolation he caused. He was protecting, he was saving, yet he was killing. How could something so terrible be so beautiful at the same time? He ducked the swing of a fine silvery sword, then brought his spear around to the side, crushing ribs. He spun the spear, shattering its already fractured length against the side of the Parshendi's comrade. He threw the spear at a third man, then caught a new one as Lopin tossed it to him. The Herdazian was collecting them from the fallen Alethi nearby to give to Kaladin when needed. When you engaged a man, you learned something about him. Were your enemies careful and precise? Did they bully their way forward, aggressive and domineering? Did they spout curses to make you enraged? Were they ruthless, or did they leave an obviously incapacitated man to live? He was impressed by the Parshendi. He fought dozens of them, each with a slightly different style of combat. It seemed they were sending only two or four at him at a time. Their attacks were careful and controlled, and each pair fought as a team. They seemed to respect him for his skill. Most telling, they seemed to back away from fighting Scar or Teft, who were wounded, instead focusing on Kaladin, Moash, and the other spearmen who showed the most skill. These were not the wild, uncultured savages he had been led to expect. These were professional soldiers who held to an honorable battlefield ethic he had found absent in most of the Alethi. In them, he found what he'd always hoped he would find in the soldiers of the Shattered Plains. That realization rocked him. He found himself respecting the Parshendi as he killed them. In the end, the storm within him drove him forward. He had chosen a course, and these Parshendi would slaughter Dalinar Kholin's army without a moment's regret. Kaladin had committed himself. He would see himself and his men through it. He wasn't certain how long he fought. Bridge Four held out remarkably well. Surely they didn't fight for very long, otherwise they would have been overwhelmed. Yet the multitude of wounded and dying Parshendi around Kaladin seemed to indicate hours. He was both relieved and oddly disappointed when a figure in plate broke through the Parshendi ranks, releasing a flood of soldiers in blue. Kaladin reluctantly stepped back, heart thumping, the storm within dampened. The light had stopped streaming off his skin noticeably. The continual supply of Parshendi with gems in their braids had kept him fueled during the early part of the fight, but the later ones had come to him without gemstones. Another indication that they weren't the simple-minded subhumans the Light Eyes claimed they were. They'd seen what he was doing, and even if they hadn't understood it, they'd countered it. He had enough light to keep him from collapsing, but as the Alethi pushed back the Parshendi, Kaladin realized how timely their arrival had been. "I need to be very careful with this," he thought. The storm within made him thirst for motion and attack, but using it drained his body. The more of it he used and the faster he used it, the worse it was when he ran out. Alethi soldiers took up perimeter defense on both sides of the bridge, and the exhausted bridgemen fell back, many sitting down and holding wounds. Kaladin hurried over to them. "Report!"
"Three dead," Rock said grimly, kneeling beside bodies he'd laid out.
"Malop, Iris Jax, and Narm." Kaladin frowned in sorrow. "Be glad the rest live," he told himself. It was easy to think, hard to accept. "How are the rest of you?"
Five more had serious wounds, but Rock and Lopin had seen to them. Those two were learning quite well from Kaladin's instruction. There was little more Kaladin could do for the wounded. He glanced at Malop's body. The man had taken an axe cut to the arm, severing it and splintering the bone. He'd died from blood loss. If Kaladin hadn't been fighting, he might have been able to...
No. No regrets for the moment.
"Pull back across," he said to the bridgeman, pointing. "Teft, you're in command. Moash, you strong enough to stay with me?"
"Sure am,"
Moash said, a grin on his bloody face. He looked excited, not exhausted. All three of the dead had been on his side, but he and the others had fought remarkably well. The other bridgemen retreated. Kaladin turned to inspect the Alethi soldiers. It was like looking into a triage tent. Every man had a wound of some sort. The ones at the center stumbled and limped. Those at the outsides still fought, their uniforms bloodied and torn. The retreat had dissolved into chaos. He made his way through the wounded, waving for them to cross the bridge. Some did as he said. Others stood about, looking dazed. Kaladin rushed up to one group that seemed better off than most.
"Who's in command here?"
"It..." The soldier's face had been cut across the cheek.
"Bright Lord Dalinar."
"Immediate command. Who's your captain?"
"Dead," the man said.
"And my company lord? And his second?"
"Stormfather,"
Kaladin thought.
Across the bridge with you, he said, then moved on. I need an officer. Who is in command of the retreat?
Ahead, he could make out a figure in scratched blue shard plate, fighting at the front of the group. That would be Dalinar's son, Adolin. He was busy holding the Barshendi off. Bothering him would not be wise.
Over here, a man called. I found Brightlord Havar. He's commander of the rear guard.
Finally, Kaladin thought, rushing through the chaos to find a bearded light-eyed man lying on the ground, coughing blood. Kaladin looked him over, noting the enormous gut wound.
Who's his second?
Dead,
said the man beside the commander. He was light-eyed.
And you are?
Nakum Gavel.
He looked young, younger than Kaladin.
You're promoted, Kaladin said. Get these men across the bridge as quickly as possible. If anyone asks, you've been given a field commission as commander of the rear guard. If anyone claims to outrank you, send them to me.
The man started.
Promoted? Who are you? Can you do that?
Someone needs to, Kaladin said. Go. Get to work.
Go, Kaladin bellowed.
Remarkably, the light-eyed man saluted him and began yelling for his squad. Colin's men were wounded, battered, and dazed, but they were well-trained. Once someone took command, orders passed quickly. Squads crossed the bridge, falling into marching formations. Likely in the confusion, they clung to these familiar patterns. Within minutes, the central mass of Colin's army was flowing across the bridge like sand in an hourglass. The ring of fighting contracted. Still, men screamed and died, the anarchic tumult of sword against shield and spear against metal. Kaladin hurriedly pulled the carapace off his armor, enraging the Parshendi didn't feel wise at the moment, then moved among the wounded looking for more officers. He found a couple, though they were dazed, wounded, and out of breath. Apparently those who were still battle-worthy were leading the two flanks who held back the Parshendi. Trailed by Moash, Kaladin hurried to the central front line, where the Alethi seemed to be holding the best. Here, finally, he found someone in command. A tall, stately light eyes with a steel breastplate and matching helm, his uniform a darker shade of blue than the others. He directed the fighting from just behind the front lines. The man nodded to Kaladin, yelling to be heard over the sounds of battle.
You command the bridgemen?
I do, Kaladin said. Why aren't your men moving across the bridge?
We are the Cobalt Guard, the man said. Our duty is to protect Brightlord Adolin.
The man pointed toward Adolin and his blue shard plate just ahead. The shardbearer seemed to be pushing toward something.
Where's the High Prince?
Kaladin yelled.
We're not sure,
the man grimaced.
His guardsmen have vanished.
You have to pull back. The bulk of the army is across. If you remain here, you'll be surrounded.
We will not leave Brightlord Adolin. I'm sorry.
Kaladin looked around. The groups of Alethi fighting at the flanks were barely holding their ground, but they wouldn't fall back until ordered.
Fine,
Kaladin said, raising his spear and pushing his way through to the front line. Here the Parshendi fought with vigor. Kaladin cut down one by the neck, spinning into the middle of a group, flashing out with his spear. His stormlight was nearly gone, but these Parshendi had gemstones in their beards. Kaladin breathed in, just a little so as not to reveal himself to the Alethi soldiers, and launched himself into a full attack. The Parshendi fell back before his furious assault, and the few members of the Cobalt Guard around him stumbled away, looking stunned. In seconds, Kaladin had a dozen Parshendi on the ground around him, wounded or dead. That opened a gap, and he tore through, Moash at his heels. A lot of the Parshendi were focused on Adolin, whose blue shardplate was scraped and cracked. Kaladin had never seen a suit of shardplate in such a terrible state. Stormlight rose from those cracks in much the way it steamed from Kaladin's skin when he held, or used to, a lot of it. The fury of a shardbearer at war gave Kaladin pause. He and Moash stopped just outside of the man's fighting range, and the Parshendi ignored the bridgeman, trying with obvious desperation to take down the shardbearer. Adolin cut down through multiple men at once, but as Kaladin had seen only once before, his blade did not slice flesh. Parshendi eyes burned and blackened, and dozens fell dead, Adolin collecting corpses around him like fruit falling from a ripened tree. and yet Adolin was obviously struggling. His shard plate was more than just cracked. There were holes in parts. His helm was gone, though he'd replaced it with a regular spearman's cap. His left leg limped, nearly dragging. That blade of his was deadly, but the Parshendi drew closer and closer. Kaladin didn't dare step into range.
"Adolin Colin," he bellowed.
The man kept fighting.
"Adolin Colin,"
Kaladin yelled again, feeling a little puff of stormlight leave him, his voice booming. The Shardbearer froze, then looked back at Kaladin. Reluctantly, the Shardbearer pulled back, letting the Cobalt Guard, using the path opened by Kaladin, rush forward and hold back the Parshendi.
"Who are you?"
Adolin demanded, reaching Kaladin. His proud, youthful face was slick with sweat, his hair a matted mess of blonde mixed with black.
"I'm the man who saved your life," Kaladin said. "I need you to order the retreat. Your troops can't fight any longer." "My father is out there, Bridgman,"
Adolin said, pointing with his overly large blade.
"I saw him just moments ago. His Rashadium went for him, but neither horse nor man has returned. I'm going to lead a squad to—"
"You are going to retreat," Kaladin said, exasperated.
"Look at your men, Colin. They can barely keep their feet, let alone fight. You're losing dozens by the minute. You need to get them out." "I won't abandon my father,"
Adolin said stubbornly.
"For the peace of—" "If you fall, Adolin Colin, these men have nothing. Their commanders are wounded or dead. You can't go to your father. You can barely walk. I repeat, get your men to safety."
The young Shardbearer stepped back, blinking at Kaladin's tone. He looked northeastward, toward where a figure in slate gray suddenly appeared on a rock outcropping, fighting against another figure in shard plate.
"He's so close."
Kaladin took a deep breath.
"I'll go for him. You lead the retreat. Hold the bridge, but only the bridge."
Adolin glared at Kaladin. He took a step, but something in his armor gave out, and he stumbled, going to one knee. Teeth gritted, he managed to rise.
"Captain Lord Mallon," Adolin bellowed. "Take your soldiers. Go with this man. Get my father out."
The man Kaladin had spoken to earlier saluted crisply. Adolin glared at Kaladin again, then hefted his shard blade and stalked with difficulty toward the bridge.
"Moash, go with him," Kaladin said. "But do it, Moash,"
Kaladin said grimly, glancing toward the outcropping where Dalinar fought. Kaladin took a deep breath, tucked his spear under his arm, and dashed off at a dead run. The Cobalt Guard yelled at him, trying to keep up, but he didn't look back. He hit the line of Parshendi attackers, turned and tripped two with his spear, then leaped over the bodies and kept going. Most Parshendi in this patch were distracted by Dalinar's fight or the battle to get to the bridge. The ranks were thin here between the two fronts. Kaladin moved quickly, drawing in more light as he ran, dodging and scrambling around Parshendi who tried to engage him. Within moments, he'd reached the place where Dalinar had been fighting. Though the rock shelf was now empty, a large group of Parshendi were gathered around its base. There, he thought, leaping forward. A horse whinnied. Dalinar looked up in shock as Gallant charged into the open ring of ground the watching Parshendi had made. The Rashadium had come to him. How? Where? The horse should have been free and safe on the staging plateau. It was too late. Dalinar knelt on one knee, beaten down by the enemy Shardbearer. The Parshendi kicked, smashing his foot into Dalinar's chest, throwing him backward. A hit to the helm followed. Another, another. The helm exploded, and the force of the hits left Dalinar dazed. Where was he? What was happening? Why was he pinned by something so heavy? Shardplate, he thought, struggling to rise. I'm wearing my shardplate. A breeze blew across his face. Head blows. You had to be careful of head blows, even when wearing plate. His enemy stood over him, looming, and seemed to inspect him, as if searching for something. Dalinar had dropped his blade. The common Parshendi soldiers surrounded the duel. They forced Gallant back, making the horse whinny. He reared. Dalinar watched him, vision swimming. Why didn't the Shardbearer just finish him? The Barshendi giant leaned down, then spoke. The words were thick with accent, and Dalinar's mind nearly dismissed them. But here, up close, Dalinar realized something. He understood what was being said. The accent was nearly indecipherable, but the words were in Alethi.
"It is you," the Parshendi Shardbearer said. "I have found you at last."
Dalinar blinked in surprise. Something disturbed the back ranks of the watching Parshendi soldiers. There was something familiar about this scene. Parshendi all around, Shardbearer in danger. Dalinar had lived it before, but from the other side. That Shardbearer couldn't be talking to him. Dalinar had been hit too hard in the head. He must be delusional. What was that disturbance in the ring of Parshendi watchers?
Sadius, Dalinar found himself thinking, his mind confused. He's come to rescue me as I rescued him. Unite them. He'll come, Dalinar thought. I know he will. I will gather them.
The Parshendi were yelling, moving, twisting. Suddenly a figure exploded through them. Not Sadius at all. A young man with a strong face and long, curling black hair. He carried a spear. And he was glowing.
What?
Dalinar thought, dazed. Kaladin landed in the open circle. The two Shardbearers were at the center, one on the ground, stormlight trailing faintly from his body. Too faintly. Considering the number of cracks, his gemstones must be almost spent. The other, a Parshendi judging by the size and shape of the limbs, was standing over the fallen one.
Great,
Kaladin thought, dashing forward before the Parshendi soldiers could collect their wits and attack him. The Parshendi Shardbearer was bent down, focused on Dalinar. The Parshendi's plate was leaking stormlight through a large fissure in the leg. So, memory flashing back to the time he rescued Amaram, Kaladin got in close and slammed his spear into the crack. The Shardbearer screamed and dropped his blade in surprise. It puffed to mist. Kaladin whipped his spear free and dodged backward. The Shardbearer swung toward him with a gauntleted fist, but missed. Kaladin jumped in again, and, throwing the full weight of his strength behind the blow, rammed his spear into the cracked leg armor again. The Shardbearer screamed even louder, stumbling, then fell to his knees. Kaladin tried to pull his spear free, but the man crumpled on top of it, snapping the shaft. Kaladin dodged back, now facing a ring of Parshendi empty-handed, stormlight streaming from his body. Silence. And then, they began speaking again, the words they'd said before.
Neshua Kadal.
They passed it among themselves, whispering, looking confused. Then they began to chant a song he'd never heard before.
Good enough, Kaladin thought,
so long as they weren't attacking him. Dalinar Kholin was moving, sitting up. Kaladin knelt down, commanding most of his stormlight into the stony ground, retaining just enough to keep him going, but not enough to make him glow. Then he hurried over to the armored horse at the side of the ring of Parshendi. The Parshendi shied away from him, looking terrified. He took the reins and quickly returned to the High Prince. Dalinar shook his head, trying to clear his mind. His vision still swam, but his thoughts were reforming. What had happened? He'd been hit on the head and now the Shardbearer was down. Down? What had caused the Shardbearer to fall? Had the creature really talked to him? No, he must have imagined that. That and the young spearman glowing. He wasn't doing so now. Holding Gallant's reins, the young man waved at Dalinar urgently. Dalinar forced himself to his feet. Around them, the Parshendi were muttering something unintelligible.
That shard plate, Dalinar thought, looking at the kneeling Parshendi. A shard blade. I could fulfill my promise to Renarin. I could...
The Shardbearer groaned, holding his leg with a gauntleted hand. Dalinar itched to finish the kill. He took a step forward, dragging his unresponsive foot. Around them, the Parshendi troops watched silently. Why didn't they attack? The tall spearman ran up to Dalinar, pulling Gallant's reins.
On your horse, Light-Eyes.
We should finish him. We could—
On your horse,
the youth commanded, tossing the reins at him as the Parshendi troops turned to engage a contingent of approaching Alethi soldiers.
You're supposed to be an honorable one,
the spearman snarled. Dalinar had rarely been spoken to in such a way, particularly by a dark-eyed man.
Well, your men won't leave without you, and my men won't leave without them. So you will get on your horse, and we will escape this death trap. Do you understand?
Dalinar met the young man's eyes, then nodded. Of course. He was right. They had to leave the enemy shardbearer. How would they get the armor out anyway? Tow the corpse all the way?
Retreat!
Dalinar bellowed to his soldiers, pulling himself into Gallant's saddle. He barely made it. His armor had so little stormlight left. Steady, loyal Gallant sprang into a gallop down the corridor of escape his men had bought for him with their blood. The nameless spearmen dashed behind him, and the Cobalt Guard fell in around them. A larger force of his troops was ahead, on the escape plateau. The bridge still stood, Adolin standing anxiously at its head, holding it for Dalinar's retreat. With a rush of relief, Dalinar galloped across the wooden deck, reaching the adjoining plateau. Adolin and the last of his troops filed along behind him. He turned Gallant, looking eastward. The Parshendi crowded up to the chasm, but did not give chase. A group of them worked on the chrysalis atop the plateau. It had been forgotten by all sides in the fervor. They had never followed before, but if they changed their mind now, they could harry Dalinar's force all the way back to the permanent bridges. But they didn't. They formed ranks and began to chant another of their songs, the same one they sang every time the Alethi forces retreated. As Dalinar watched, a figure in cracked silvery shard plate and a red cape stumbled to their forefront. The helm had been removed, but it was too distant to make out any features on the black and red marbled skin. Dalinar's erstwhile foe raised his shard blade in a motion that was unmistakable. A salute. A gesture of respect. Instinctively, Dalinar summoned his blade, and 10 heartbeats later, raised it to salute in return. The bridgeman pulled the bridge across the chasm, separating the armies.
Set up triage,
Dalinar bellowed.
We don't leave anyone behind who has a chance at living. The Parshendi will not attack us here.
His men let out a shout. Somehow escaping felt like more of a victory than any gem heart they'd won. The tired Alethi troops divided into battalions. 8 had marched to battle, and they became 8 again, though several had only a few 100 members remaining. Those men trained for field surgery looked through the ranks while the remaining officers got survivor counts. The men began to sit down among the pain spren and exhaustion spren, bloodied, some weaponless, many with torn uniforms. On the other plateau, the Parshendi continued their odd song. Dalinar found himself focusing on the bridge crew. The youth who had saved him was apparently their leader. Had he fought down a shard-bearer? Dalinar hazily remembered a quick, sharp encounter, a spear to the leg. Clearly the young man was both skilled and lucky. The bridgeman's team acted with far more coordination and discipline than Dalinar would have expected of such lowly men. He could wait no longer. Dalinar nudged Gallant forward, crossing the stones and passing wounded, exhausted soldiers. That reminded him of his own fatigue, but now that he had a chance to sit, he was recovering, his head no longer ringing. The leader of the bridge crew was seeing to a man's wound, and his fingers worked with expertise. A man trained in field medicine? Among bridgemen?
Well, why not? Dalinar thought. It's no odder than their being able to fight so well.
Satius had been holding out on him. The young man looked, and for the first time Dalinar noticed the slave brands on the youth's forehead, hidden by the long hair. The youth stood, posture hostile, folding his arms.
You are to be commended, Dalinar said. All of you. Why did your high prince retreat?
only to send you back for us.
Several of the bridgemen chuckled.
He didn't send us back, their leader said. We came on our own, against his wishes.
Dalinar found himself nodding, and he realized that this was the only answer that made sense.
Why? Dalinar asked. Why come for us?
The youth shrugged.
You allowed yourself to get trapped in there quite spectacularly.
Dalinar nodded tiredly. Perhaps he should have been annoyed at the young man's tone, but it was only the truth.
Yes. But why did you come? And how did you learn to fight so well?
By accident, the young man said. He turned back to his wounded.
What can I do to repay you?
Dalinar asked. The bridgeman looked back at him.
I don't know. We were going to flee from Sadeus, disappear in the confusion. We might still, but he'll certainly hunt us down and kill us. I could take your men to my camp, make Sadeus free you from your bondage. I worry that he wouldn't let us go,
the bridgeman said, eyes haunted.
And I worry that your camp would afford no safety at all. This move today by Sadeus. It will mean war between you two, will it not?
Would it? Dalinar had avoided thinking of Sadeus. Survival had taken his focus. But his anger at the man was a seething pit deep within. He would exact revenge on Sadeus for this. But could he allow war between the princedoms? It would shatter Alethkar. More than that, it would destroy the Kolin house. Dalinar didn't have the troops or the allies to stand against Sadeus, not after this disaster. How would Sadeus respond when Dalinar returned? Would he try to finish the job, attacking? No, Dalinar thought.
No, he did it this way for a purpose.
Sadeus had not engaged him personally. He had abandoned Dalinar, but by Alethi standards, that was another thing entirely. He didn't want to risk the kingdom either. Sadeus wouldn't want outright war, and Dalinar couldn't afford outright war, despite his seething anger. He formed a fist, turning to look at the spearman.
It will not turn to war, Dalinar said. Not yet, at least. Well, if that's the case, the spearman said, then by taking us into your camp you commit robbery. The king's law, the codes my men always claim you uphold, would demand that you return us to Sadeus. He won't let us go easily. I will take care of Sadeus, Dalinar said. Return with me. I vow that you will be safe. I promise it with every shred of honor I have.
The young bridgeman met his eyes, searching for something. Such a hard man he was for one so young.
All right, the spearman said. We'll return. I can't leave my men back at camp, and with so many men now wounded, we don't have the proper supplies to run.
The young man turned back to his work, and Dalinar rode gallant in search of a casualty report. He forced himself to contain his rage at Sadeus. It was difficult. No, Dalinar could not let this turn to war, but neither could he let things go back to the way they had been. Sadeus had upset the balance, and it could never be regained. Not in the same way.
Sixty-nine. Justice. All is withdrawn from me. I stand against the one who saved my life. I protect the one who killed my promises. I raise my hand. The storm responds. Tanatahak, 1173. 18 seconds pre-death. A dark-eyed mother of four in her 62nd year. Navani pushed her way past the guards, ignoring their protests and the calls of her attending ladies. She forced herself to remain calm. She would remain calm. What she had heard was just rumor. It had to be. Unfortunately, the older she grew, the worse she became at maintaining a bright lady's proper tranquility. She hastened her step through Sidious's war camp. Soldiers raised arms toward her as she passed, either to offer her aid or to demand she halt. She ignored both. They'd never dare lay a hand on her. Being the king's mother gained one a few privileges. The camp was messy and poorly laid out. Pockets of merchants, whores, and workers made their homes in shanties built on the leeward side of barracks. Drippings of hardened creme hung from most leeward eaves, like trails of wax left to pour over the side of a table. It was a distinct contrast to the neat lines and scrubbed buildings of Dalinar's war camp. He will be fine, she told himself. He'd better be fine. It was a testament to her disordered state that she barely considered constructing a new street pattern for Sidious in her head. She made her way directly to the staging area and arrived to find an army that hardly looked as if it had been to battle. Soldiers without any blood on their uniforms, men chatting and laughing, officers walking down lines and dismissing the men squad by squad. That should have relieved her. This didn't look like a force that had just suffered a disaster. Instead, it made her even more anxious. Sidious, in unmarred red shard plate, was speaking with a group of officers in the shade of a nearby canopy. She stalked up to the canopy, but here a group of guards managed to bar her way, forming up shoulder to shoulder while one went to inform Sidious of her arrival. Navani folded her arms impatiently. Perhaps she should have taken a palanquin, as her attending ladies had suggested. Several of them, looking beleaguered, were just arriving at the staging area. A palanquin would be faster in the long run, they had explained, as it would leave time for messengers to be sent so Sidious could receive her. Once she had obeyed such proprieties. She could remember being a young woman, playing the games expertly, delighting in ways to manipulate the system. What had that gotten her? A dead husband whom she'd never loved, and a privileged position in court that amounted to being put out to pasture. What would Sidious do if she just started screaming? The king's own mother, bellowing like an axe-hound whose antenna had been twisted. She considered it as the soldier waited for a chance to announce her to Sidious. From the corner of her eye, she noticed a youth in a blue uniform arriving in the staging area, accompanied by a small honor guard of three men. It was Renarin, for once bearing an expression other than calm curiosity. Wide-eyed and frantic, he hurried up to Navani. "Mashallah," he pled in his quiet voice. "Please, what have you heard?" "Sidious's army returned without your father's army," Navani said. "There is talk of a rout, though it doesn't look as if these men have been through one." She glared at Sidious, giving serious contemplation to throwing a fit. Fortunately, he finally spoke with the soldier and then sent him back. "You may approach, Brightness," the man said, bowing to her. "About time," she growled, shoving past and passing underneath the canopy. Renarin joined her, walking more hesitantly. "Brightness Navani," Sidious said, clasping his hands behind his back, imposing in his crimson plate. "I had hoped to bring you the news at your son's palace. I suppose that a disaster like this is too large to contain. I express my condolences at the loss of your brother." Renarin gasped softly. Navani steeled herself, folding her arms, trying to quiet the screams of denial and pain that came from the back of her mind. This was a pattern. She often saw patterns in things. In this case, the pattern was that she could never possess anything of value for long. It was always snatched from her just when it began to look promising. "Quiet," she scolded herself. "You will explain," she said to Sidious, meeting his gaze. She'd practiced that look over the decades, and was pleased to see that it discomforted him. "I'm sorry, Brightness," Sidious repeated, stammering. "The Parshendi overwhelmed your brother's army. It was folly to work together. Our change in tactics was so threatening to the savages that they brought every soldier they could to this battle, surrounding us. And so you left Dalinar? We fought hard to reach him, but the numbers were simply overwhelming. We had to retreat, lest we lose ourselves as well. I would have continued fighting, save for the fact that I saw your brother fall with my own eyes, swarmed by Parshendi with hammers. He grimaced. They began carrying away chunks of bloodied shard plate as prizes. Barbaric monsters! Navani felt cold. Cold. Numb. How could this happen? After finally, making that stone-headed man see her as a woman, rather than as a sister. And now... She set her jaw against the tears. I don't believe it. I understand that the news is difficult. Sidious waved for an attendant to fetch her a chair. I wish I had not been forced to bring it to you. Dalinar and I? Well, I have known him for many years, and while we did not always see the same sunrise, I considered him an ally and a friend. He cursed softly, looking eastward. They will pay for this. I will see that they pay. He seemed so earnest that Navani found herself wavering. Poor Renarin, pale-faced and wide-eyed, seemed stunned beyond the means to speak. When the chair arrived, Navani refused it, so Renarin sat, earning a glance of disapproval from Sidious. Renarin grasped his head in his hands, staring at the ground. He was trembling. He's High Prince now, Navani realized. No. He was only High Prince if she accepted the idea that Dalinar was dead. And he wasn't. He couldn't be. Sidious had all of the bridges, she thought, looking down at the lumberyard. Navani stepped out into the late afternoon sunlight, feeling its heat on her skin. She walked up to her attendants. Brushpen, she said to Mikal, who carried a satchel with Navani's possessions. The thickest one. And my burn ink. The short, plump woman opened the satchel, taking out a long brush pen with a knob of hog bristles on the end, as wide as a man's thumb. Navani took it. The ink followed. Around her, the guards stared as Navani took the pen and dipped it into the blood-colored ink. She knelt and began to paint on the stone ground. Art was about creation. That was its soul, its essence. Creation and order. You took something disorganized, a splash of ink, an empty page, and you built something from it. Something from nothing. The soul of creation. She felt the tears on her cheeks as she painted. Dalinar had no wife and no daughters. He had nobody to pray for him. And so Navani painted a prayer onto the stones themselves, sending her attendants for more ink. She paced off the size of the glyph as she continued its border, making it enormous, spreading her ink onto the tan rocks. Soldiers gathered around, Sadeas stepping from his canopy, watching her paint, her back to the sun as she crawled on the ground and furiously dipped her brush pen into the ink jars. What was a prayer if not creation? Making something where nothing existed, creating a wish out of despair, a plea out of anguish. Bowing one's back before the Almighty, and forming humility from the empty pride of a human life. Something from nothing. True creation. Her tears mixed with the ink. She went through four jars. She crawled, holding her safe hand to the ground, brushing the stones and smearing ink on her cheeks when she wiped the tears. When she finally finished, she knelt back on her knees before a glyph 20 paces long, emblazoned as if in blood. The wet ink reflected sunlight, and she fired it with a candle. The ink was made to burn, whether wet or dry. The flames burned across the length of the prayer, killing it and sending its soul to the Almighty. She bowed her head before the prayer. It was only a single character, but a complex one. Fath. Justice. Men watched quietly, as if afraid of spoiling her solemn wish. A cold breeze began blowing, whipping at pennants and cloaks. The prayer went out, but that was fine. It wasn't meant to burn long. "Bright Lord Sadeus!" an anxious voice called. Navani looked up. Soldiers parted, making way for a runner in green. He hurried up to Sadeus, beginning to speak, but the High Prince grabbed the man by the shoulder in a shard-plate grip and pointed, gesturing for his guards to make a perimeter. He pulled the messenger beneath the canopy. Navani continued to kneel beside her prayer. The flames left a black scar in the shape of the glyph on the ground. Someone stepped up beside her, Renarin. He knelt on one knee, resting a hand on her shoulder. "Thank you, Mashallah." She nodded, standing, her free hand sprinkled with drops of red pigment. Her cheeks were still wet with tears, but she narrowed her eyes, looking through the press of soldiers toward Sadeus. His expression was thunderous, face growing red, eyes wide with anger. She turned and pushed her way through the press of soldiers, scrambling up to the rim of the staging field. Renarin and some of Sadeus's officers joined her in staring out over the shattered plains. And there they saw a creeping line of men limping back toward the war camps, led by a mounted man in slate-gray armor.
Dalinar rode gallant at the head of 2,653 men. That was all that remained of his assault force of 8,000. The long trek back across the plateaus had given him time to think. His insides were still a tempest of emotions. He flexed his left hand as he rode. It was now encased by a blue-painted shardplate gauntlet, borrowed from Adolin. It would take days to regrow Dalinar's own gauntlet. Longer if the Parshendi tried to grow a full suit from the one he had left. They would fail so long as Dalinar's armorers fed stormlight to his suit. The abandoned gauntlet would degrade and crumble to dust, a new one growing for Dalinar. For now, he wore Adolin's. They had collected all of the infused gemstones among his 2,600 men, and used that stormlight to recharge and reinforce his armor. It was still scarred with cracks. Healing as much damage as it had sustained would take days, but the plate was in fighting shape again if it came to that. He needed to make certain it didn't. He intended to confront Sadeus, and he wanted to be armored when he did. In fact, he wanted to storm up the incline to Sadeus's war camp and declare formal war on his old friend. Perhaps summon his blade and see Sadeus dead. But he wouldn't. His soldiers were too weak, his position too tenuous. Formal war would destroy him and the kingdom. He had to do something else. Something that protected the kingdom. Revenge would come, eventually. Alethkar came first. He lowered his blue gauntleted fist, gripping Gallant's reins. Adolin rode a short distance away. They'd repaired his armor as well, though he now lacked a gauntlet. Dalinar had refused the gift of his son's gauntlet at first, but had given in to Adolin's logic. If one of them was going to go without, it should be the younger man. Inside Shardplate, their differences in age didn't matter. But outside of it, Adolin was a young man in his 20s, and Dalinar an aging man into his 50s. He still didn't know what to think of the visions, and their apparent failure in telling him to trust Sadeus. He'd confront that later, one step at a time.
"Elthal," Dalinar called.
The highest-ranking officer who had survived the disaster, Elthal, was a limber man with a distinguished face and a thin mustache. His arm was in a sling. He'd been one of those to hold the gap alongside Dalinar during the last part of the flight.
"Yes, Bright Lord?"
Elthal asked, jogging over to Dalinar. All of the horses, save the two Rashadium, were carrying wounded.
"Take the wounded to my war camp," Dalinar said. "Then tell Teleb to bring the entire camp to alert. Mobilize the remaining companies."
"Yes, Bright Lord," the man said, saluting. "Bright Lord, what should I tell them to prepare for?"
"Anything. But hopefully nothing."
I understand, Brightlord,
Elthal said, leaving to follow the orders. Dalinar turned gallant to march over to the group of bridgemen, still led by their somber leader, a man named Kaladin. They'd left their bridge as soon as they'd reached the permanent bridges. Sadeus could send for it eventually. The bridgemen stopped as he approached, looking as tired as he felt, then arranged themselves in a subtly hostile formation. They clung to their spears as if certain he'd try to take them away. They had saved him, yet they obviously didn't trust him.
I'm sending my wounded back to my camp, Dalinar said. You should go with them.
You're confronting Sadeus? Kaladin asked.
I must.
I have to know why he did what he did.
I will buy your freedom when I do.
Then I'm staying with you, Kaladin said.
Me too, said a hawk-faced man at the side.
Soon all of the bridgemen were demanding to stay. Kaladin turned to them.
I should send you back.
What?
Asked an older bridgeman with a short gray beard.
You can risk yourself, but we can't. We have men back in Sadeus's camp. We need to get them out. At the very least, we need to stay together. See this through.
The others nodded. Again, Dalinar was struck by their discipline. More and more, he was certain Sadeus had nothing to do with that. It was this man at their head. Though his eyes were dark brown, he held himself like a bright lord. Well, if they wouldn't go, Dalinar wouldn't force them. He continued to ride, and soon close to 1,000 of Dalinar's soldiers broke off and marched south toward his war camp. The rest of them continued on toward Sadeus's camp. As they drew closer, Dalinar noticed a small crowd gathering at the final chasm. Two figures in particular stood at their forefront, Renarin and Navani.
What are they doing in Sadeus's war camp? Adolin asked, smiling through his fatigue, edging Sureblood up beside Dalinar.
I don't know, Dalinar said, but the Stormfather blessed them for coming.
Seeing their welcome faces, he began to feel it sink in, finally, that he had survived the day. Gallant crossed the last bridge. Renarin was there waiting, and Dalinar rejoiced. For once, the boy was displaying outright joy. Dalinar swung free from the saddle and embraced his son.
Father, Renarin said, you live!
Adolin laughed, swinging out of his own saddle, armor clanking. Renarin pulled out of the embrace and grabbed Adolin on the shoulder, pounding the shard plate lightly with his other hand, grinning widely. Dalinar smiled as well, turning from the brothers to look at Navani. She stood with hands clasped before her, one eyebrow raised. Her face, oddly, bore a few small spears of red paint.
You weren't even worried, were you? He said to her.
Worried?
She asked. She met his eyes, and for the first time he noticed their redness.
I was terrified.
And then Dalinar found himself grabbing her in an embrace. He had to be careful as he was in shardplate, but the gauntlets let him feel the silk of her dress, and his missing helm let him smell the sweet floral scent of her perfumed soap. He held her as tightly as he dared, bowing his head and pressing his nose into her hair. She noted warmly.
It appears that I was missed. The others are watching. They'll talk.
I don't care.
It appears I was very much missed.
On the battlefield, he said gruffly, I thought I would die, and I realized it was all right.
She pulled her head back, looking confused.
I've spent too much of my time worrying about what people think, Navani. When I thought my time had arrived, I realized that all my worrying had been wasted. In the end, I was pleased with how I had lived my life.
He looked down at her, then mentally unlatched his right gauntlet, letting it drop to the ground with a clank. He reached up with that calloused hand, cupping her chin.
I had only two regrets. One for you, and one for Renarin.
So you're saying you can just die, and it would be all right?
No, he said. What I'm saying is that I faced eternity and I saw peace there. That will change how I live.
Without all of the guilt?
He hesitated. Being me, I doubt I'll banish it entirely. The end was peace. But living, that is still a tempest. Still, I see things differently now. It is time to stop letting myself be shoved around by lying men.
He looked up toward the ridge above, where more soldiers in green were gathering.
I keep thinking of one of the visions, he said softly. The latest one, where I met Noadon. He rejected my suggestion that he write down his wisdom. There's something there, something I need to learn.
What?
Navani asked.
I don't know yet, but I'm close to figuring it out.
He held her close again, hand on the back of her head, feeling her hair. He wished for the plate to be gone, to not be separated from her by the metal. But the time for that had not yet come. Reluctantly, he released her, turning to the side where Renarin and Adolin were watching them uncomfortably. His soldiers were looking up at Satyrus's army, gathering on the ridge.
I can't let this come to fighting,
Dalinar thought, reaching down and putting his hand into the fallen gauntlet. The straps tightened, connecting to the rest of the armor.
But I'm also not going to slink back to my camp without confronting him.
He at least had to know the purpose of the betrayal. All had been going so well. Besides, there was the matter of his promise to the bridgeman. Dalinar walked up the slope, blood-stained blue cloak flapping behind him. Adolin clanked up beside him on one side, Navani keeping pace with him on the other. Renarin followed, Dalinar's remaining 1,600 troops marching up as well.
Father,
Adolin said, looking at the hostile troops.
Don't summon your blade. This will not come to blows.
Satyrus abandoned you, didn't he?
Navani asked quietly, eyes alight with anger.
He didn't just abandon us, Adolin spat. He set us up, then betrayed us.
We survived, Dalinar said firmly.
The way ahead was becoming clearer. He knew what he needed to do.
He won't attack us here, but he might try to provoke us. Keep your sword as mist, Adolin, and don't let our troops make any mistakes.
The soldiers in green parted reluctantly, holding spears. Hostile. To the side, Kaladin and his bridgemen walked near the front of Dalinar's force. Adolin didn't summon his blade, though he regarded Satyrus's troops around them with contempt. Dalinar's soldiers couldn't have felt easy about being surrounded by enemies once again, but they followed him onto the staging field. Satyrus stood ahead. The treacherous High Prince waited with arms folded, still wearing his shard plate, curly black hair blowing in the breeze. Someone had burned an enormous Thath glyph on the stones here, and Satyrus stood at its center. Justice. There was something magnificently appropriate about Satyrus standing there, treading upon justice.
Dalinar, Satyrus exclaimed. Old friend. It appears that I overestimated the odds against you. I apologize for retreating when you were still in danger, but the safety of my men came first. I'm certain you understand.
Dalinar stopped a short distance from Satyrus. The two faced each other, collected armies tense. A cool breeze whipped at a canopy behind Satyrus.
Of course, Dalinar said, his voice even. You did what you had to do.
Satyrus relaxed visibly, though several of Dalinar's soldiers muttered at that. Adolin silenced them with pointed glances. Dalinar turned, waving Adolin and his men backward. Navani gave him a raised eyebrow but retreated with the others when he urged her. Dalinar looked back at Satyrus, and the man, looking curious, waved his own attendants back. Dalinar walked up to the edge of the Thath glyph, and Sadeus stepped forward until only inches separated them. They were matched in height. Standing this close, Dalinar thought he could see tension and anger in Sadeus's eyes. Dalinar's survival had ruined months of planning.
"I need to know why,"
Dalinar asked, too quietly for any but Sadeus to hear.
"Because of my oath, old friend."
"What?" Dalinar asked, hands forming fists.
"We swore something together years ago,"
Sadeus sighed, losing his flippancy and speaking openly.
"Protect Elokar, protect this kingdom."
"That's what I was doing. We had the same purpose, and we were fighting together, Sadeus. It was working."
"Yes," Sadeus said. "But I'm confident I can beat the Parshendi on my own now. Everything we've done together I can manage by splitting my army into two, one to race on ahead and a larger force to follow. I had to take this chance to remove you. Dalinar, can't you see? Gavilar died because of his weakness. I wanted to attack the Parshendi from the start, conquer them. He insisted on a treaty, which led to his death. Now you're starting to act just like him. Those same ideas, the same ways of speaking. Through you, they begin to infect Elokar. He dresses like you. He talks of the codes to me, and of how perhaps we should enforce them through all the war camps. He's beginning to think of retreating."
"And so you'd have me think this an act of honor?" Dalinar growled.
"Not at all," Sadeus said, chuckling. "I have struggled for years to become Elokar's most trusted advisor. But there was always you, distracting him, holding his ear despite my every effort. I won't pretend this was only about honor, though there was an element of that to it. In the end, I just wanted you gone."
Sadeus's voice grew cold.
"But you are going insane, old friend. You may name me a liar, but I did what I did today as a mercy. A way of letting you die in glory, rather than watching you descend further and further. By letting the Parshendi kill you, I could protect Elokar from you and turn you into a symbol to remind the others what we're really doing here. Your death might have become what finally united us. Ironic, if you consider it."
Dalinar breathed in and out. It was hard not to let his anger, his indignation, consume him.
"Then tell me one thing. Why not pin the assassination attempt on me? Why clear me, if you were only looking to betray me later on?"
Sadeus snorted softly.
"Bah. Nobody would really believe that you tried to kill the king. They'll gossip, but they don't believe it. Blaming you too quickly would have risked implicating myself."
He shook his head.
"I think Elokar knows who tried to kill him. He's admitted as much to me, though he won't give me the name."
"What?" Dalinar thought. "He knows? But how? Why not tell us who?"
Dalinar adjusted his plans. He wasn't certain if Sadeus was telling the truth, but if he was, he could use this.
"He knows it wasn't you," Sadeus continued. "I can read that much in him, though he doesn't realize how transparent he is. Blaming you would have been pointless. Elokar would have defended you, and I might very well have lost the position of High Prince of Information. But it did give me a wonderful opportunity to make you trust me again."
"Unite them.
The visions." But the man who spoke to Dalinar and them had been dead wrong. Acting with honor hadn't won Sadeus's loyalty. It had just opened Dalinar up to betrayal.
"If it means anything," Sadeus said idly. "I'm fond of you. I really am. But you are a boulder in my path, and a force working against its own knowledge to destroy Gavilar's kingdom. When the chance came along, I took it.
It wasn't simply a convenient opportunity, Dalinar said. You set this up, Sadeus.
I planned, but I'm often planning. I don't always act on my options. Today I did.
Dalinar snorted.
Well, you've shown me something today, Sadeus. Shown it to me by the very act of trying to remove me.
And what is that?
Sadeus asked, amused.
You've shown me that I'm still a threat.
The High Princes continued their low-pitched conversation. Kaladin stood to the side of Dalinar's soldiers, exhausted, with the members of Bridge Four. Sadeus spared a glance for them. Matal stood in the crowd, and had been watching Kaladin's team the entire time, red-faced. He probably knew that he would be punished as Lamoral had been. They should have learned. They should have killed Kaladin at the start.
They tried, he thought. They failed.
He didn't know what had happened to him, what had gone on with Syl and the words in his head. It seemed that Stormlight worked better for him now. It had been more potent, more powerful. But now it was gone, and he was so tired. Drained. He'd pushed himself and Bridge Four too far, too hard. Perhaps he and the others should have gone to Colin's camp. But Teft was right. They needed to see this through.
He promised, Kaladin thought. He promised he would free us from Sadeus.
And yet where had the promises of Light Eyes gotten him in the past? The High Princes broke off their conference, separating, stepping back from one another.
Well, Sadeus said loudly, your men are obviously tired, Dalinar. We can speak later about what went wrong, though I think it is safe to assume that our alliance has proven unfeasible.
Unfeasible, Dalinar said. A kind way of putting it.
He nodded toward the bridgemen.
I will take these bridgemen with me to my camp.
I'm afraid I cannot part with them.
Kaladin's heart sank.
Surely they aren't worth much to you, Dalinar said. Name your price.
I'm not looking to sell.
I will pay 60 ruby bromes per man,
Dalinar said. That drew gasps from the watching soldiers on both sides. It was easily 20 times the price of a good slave.
Not for 1,000 each, Dalinar,
Sadeus said. Kaladin could see the deaths of his bridgemen in those eyes.
Take your soldiers and go. Leave my property here.
Do not press me on this, Sadeus,
Dalinar said. Suddenly the tension was back. Dalinar's officers lowered hands to swords, and his spearmen perked up, gripping the hafts of their weapons.
Do not press you, Sadeus asked. What kind of threat is that? Leave my camp. It's obvious that there is nothing more between us. If you try to steal my property, I will have every justification in attacking you.
Dalinar stood in place. He looked confident, though Kaladin saw no reason why.
And another promise dies, Kaladin thought, turning away.
In the end, for all his good intentions, this Dalinar Kolin was the same as the others. Behind Kaladin, men gasped in surprise. Kaladin froze, then spun around. Dalinar Kolin had summoned his massive shard blade. It dripped beads of water from having just been summoned. His armor steamed faintly, stormlight rising from the cracks. Sadeus stumbled back, eyes wide. His honor guard drew their swords. Adolin Kolin reached his hand to the side, apparently beginning to summon his own weapon. Dalinar took one step forward, then drove his blade point first into the middle of the blackened glyph on the stone. He took a step back.
For the bridgemen, he said.
Sadeus blinked. Muttering voices fell silent, and the people on the field seemed too stunned even to breathe.
What?
Sadeus asked.
The blade,
Dalinar said, firm voice carrying in the air.
In exchange for your bridgemen. All of them. Everyone you have in camp. They become mine, to do with as I please, never to be touched by you again. In exchange, you get the sword.
Sadeus looked down at the blade, incredulous.
This weapon is worth fortunes, cities, palaces, kingdoms.
Do we have a deal? Dalinar asked.
Father, no,
Adolin Colin said, his own blade appearing in his hand.
You...
Dalinar raised a hand, silencing the younger man. He kept his eyes on Sadeus.
Do we have a deal?
He asked, each word sharp. Kaladin stared, unable to move, unable to think. Sadeus looked at the shard blade, eyes full of lust. He glanced at Kaladin, hesitated just briefly, then reached and grabbed the blade by the hilt.
Take the storming creatures.
Dalinar nodded curtly, turning away from Sadeus.
Let's go, he said to his entourage.
They're worthless, you know, Sadeus said. You're of the 10 fools, Dalinar Colin. Don't you see how mad you are? This will be remembered as the most ridiculous decision ever made by an Aleti High Prince.
Dalinar didn't look back. He walked up to Kaladin and the other members of Bridge Four. Go, Dalinar said to them, voice kindly.
Gather your things and the men you left behind. I will send troops with you to act as guards. Leave the bridges and come swiftly to my camp. You will be safe there. You have my word of honor on it.
He began to walk away. Kaladin shook off his numbness. He scrambled after the High Prince, grabbing his armored arm.
Wait, you, that, what just happened?
Dalinar turned back to him. Then the High Prince laid a hand on Kaladin's shoulder, the gauntlet gleaming blue, mismatched with the rest of his slate-gray armor.